Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ@offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on August 20th of 2017 under the headline, Daredevil Al Fawcett was the Evil Knievel of the 1920s. It is a rewriting and thorough re-researching of a much shorter column. That was first published in June of 2009. Here we go. The 1920s were the era of daredevils, from Ormer Locklear hanging upside down from the wings of his war surplus Curtiss biplane, to Edmondo Zucchini getting shot out of a cannon, to Harry Houdini getting dropped upside down and manacled into a narrow tank of water and emerging triumphant. To that list of high-risk adrenaline artists can be added Al Fawcett, the only person in the history of the universe to have paddled over Willamette Falls in Oregon City, Celilo Falls near the Dalles, and 186-foot South Falls at Silver Falls State Park, and live to tell about it. The story of Daredevil Al Fawcett is an interesting one, and nobody who knew him as a young man would have accepted a bet that he'd end up dying in bed of natural causes at the end of a long, long life. Even before his waterfall jumping days, he was an adrenaline junkie. He made a living as a logger, but was always up for extracurricular high-risk hijinks. Then in 1926, 20th Century Fox expressed an interest in working with someone who could make it down Sunset Falls on the Skycomish River in a canoe. Sources differ on the nature of the offer, with some claiming there was a $1,500 prize offered and others claiming it was Al's idea and that it had been he who approached Fox, but either way, he was soon making plans and building a special boat to carry him to the bottom of the 104-foot plunge in relative safety. The boat was a fully enclosed thing made of a 32-foot hollowed-out log, lined and padded with inner tube tires and equipped with bottled oxygen. Al teamed up with his old friend Charles Cap Elwell, a steamboat skipper, to build it. If there was a deal with Fox, the studio backed out, although there were film crews there to capture the scene. Still, Al's design called for him to be fully inside the boat at all times, so it would have looked on film more or less like a log going over the falls. It wouldn't have looked like much in a movie. Al made it, a little battered and bruised, but basically okay. Sunset Falls is about halfway between a waterfall and a horrifically unnavigable river rapid. The Skycomish River roars at speeds of up to 80 miles an hour down an incline of 20 to 70 degrees, dropping 104 feet in less than 95 yards. So Al wasn't just falling through space. Impacts with boulders and side currents filled the boat with water and broke the line to his air tank, and he had to hold his breath and hope for the best. It worked out, and Al Fawcett was instantly famous. He wasn't instantly rich, though. Most of the witnesses of the event had snuck in, evading his ticket booth and $1 admission fee. This would continue to be a problem for Al throughout his career. Al had found his calling, and he immediately set about one-upping himself. The first thing he did was to try to get permission to shoot 268-foot Snoqualmie Falls. Probably the second was to see about traveling to New York and doing the big one, Niagara, at 176 feet. He would continue to chase these two big waterfalls for years, but could never get the needed permission to do them. Later in 1926, Al shot 28-foot Eagle Falls on the Skycomish, and the next year tackled Spokane Falls, his tallest yet at 186 feet. This one left him in bad shape, with a concussion and numerous bad bruises. Willamette Falls in Oregon City was next for Al. These falls were only 42 feet high, but the Willamette River makes up for any deficit in height with sheer mass. Al showed up to shoot Willamette Falls on March 30, 1928, close to the height of the spring runoff. The hydraulic pressure burst the hatch open when he hit the splash pool, filling the boat with water and battering Al around. The boat couldn't sink, of course, with all the inner tubes in it, but the action in the splash pool at the base of Willamette Falls is quite rough and kept Al underwater for several long, terrifying minutes. Al needed a few days in the hospital to recover from this one. By this time, Al was starting to notice something vexing. He was getting famous, but he wasn't getting rich. Again, in Oregon City, the vast majority of people who watched him shoot the falls had dodged his ticket booth and watched for free. He decided what he really needed to do was find something truly spectacular, a really tall waterfall on remote private property to which access could be completely controlled. And that is what led him to the biggest waterfall in what's now Silver Falls State Park, South Falls. South Falls takes tiny Silver Creek over a 177-foot drop into a splash pool that looks from the top just a little bit bigger than a Mr. Turtle pool. It's way out in the middle of nowhere, far away from any towns, and in 1928 it was still owned by Daniel Geisler of Silverton. It wouldn't become public land until 1935. It was perfect. Geisler, who was already making small amounts of money charging folks admission to watch him shove junk cars off the top, was amenable to Al's plan, but he was worried about the liability. So the two men made a deal. Al would buy the falls and surrounding land, own it for one day, and Geisler would buy it back after the stunt, or inherit it in Al's will if things went really badly. To make it work, Al and his partner, Keith McCullough, dammed up Silver Creek at the top and rigged a chute to push Al's boat out over the rocky lip. Then they rigged a cable that would guide the boat into that pint-sized splash pool so that it wouldn't end up splattering on the nearby rocks instead. The big day was July 1st, 1928. Thousands of spectators were there to watch, and soon they started getting restless. It seemed like they'd been waiting a long time. One spectator, Brian Gordon of Silverton, said he went to investigate and found Fawcett, quote, "sitting in the canoe, bracing himself with spirits for the ordeal ahead, for which you could not blame him." That was, of course, bootleg spirits. Prohibition was still going strong in 1928. There was a rumor that Al wanted to back out, and McCullough was helping him change his mind, quote, "with a little help from a bottle of handcrafted gin," as historian Jeff Breckus puts it. Given Al's track record of waterfall jumps, though, this seems unlikely. It's far more likely that Al was just having a drink or six while waiting for confirmation that the huge crowd gathered to watch didn't include any freeloaders. Finally, Al gave the signal. The dam was opened. Some sources say the dam never worked and that they had to be pushed. The water roared. Al shot out into space as the spectators, quote, "caught their hearts in their throats and held their breath," Breckus again. But 30 feet above the water, the boat hung up on a splice in the guide cable, which snapped it to a momentary halt in midair. Then the guide ring ripped off the boat and it dropped to the water, where it landed flat with a terrific crack. Breckus compares this to a high diver doing a belly flop. The boat had been intended to knife into the water like a torpedo and then pop back to the surface again with a soggy but triumphant Fawcett ready to jump out and shake some hands. Instead, a badly injured Fawcett barely managed a feeble wave before being brought to shore and rushed to the hospital. And while he was there recuperating, McCullough skipped town with the entire $2,500 proceeds from the gate. After shooting Silver Creek Falls, Al considered quitting. Instead, he re-engineered his system, designing a cigar-shaped boat in which he would lie at full length, surrounded by inner tubes, like the Michelin Man. In this, he successfully shot his tallest waterfall yet, 212-foot Shoshone Falls in Idaho, and finished off with a trouble-free navigation over 83-foot Celilo Falls on the Columbia River. But Celilo would be his last jump. It just wasn't penciling. Gate receipts just wouldn't cover his construction expenses and hospital bills. He went to Hollywood to seek employment as a stuntman, but that didn't work out either. By 1934, he'd moved to Portland, where he quietly lived for the next 35 years, making a living with his mechanical skills and regaling anyone who would listen with tales of his past glory. He died at the age of 68, in bed. But even at the time of his death, he was still working on a new boat for that long-delayed attempt on Niagara Falls. Key sources in this story included works by Jeff Breckus, Louise Lindgren, and friendsofsilverfalls.net. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Say, are you an audiobook listener? And do you enjoy old pre-war pulp stories like Tarzan of the Apes and Conan the Barbarian and The Call of Cthulhu and stuff like that? Or do you like early Victorian penny dreadful fiction like Sweeney Todd and Varney the Vampire and Highwayman Dick Turpin? If so, you might enjoy the audiobooks I have out there in the world. Easiest way to find them is for the search for my name on audible.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Organ History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.